You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to your post-match Raw on Anfield Index Pro. Podcasting to you from my lovely sunny field here in beautiful rural Ireland, I'm Trev Downey, and joining me to give their immediate reactions to Fulham 1, Liverpool 3 in the Premier League from Craven Cottage are Dave Hendrick and Jim Boardman. And Dave, you know, it's a long shot. It was always going to be a long shot. It remains a long shot, but we have a series of last chances right up until the last weekend. If we keep winning, it's still alive. That's just the way it's going to be. And the win was got this afternoon after a fashion. I will be honest, there were times when I was very, very frustrated by what I was saying. And several people did themselves no good and then suddenly did some rehabilitation over the course of this game. So, you know, narratives will narrative. But I'm very curious to see if you're feeling exhilarated after or if it's just that relief of we're still in it.
More the latter, to be honest. I thought the first half was almost a continuation of what we saw against Atalanta, a marginal improvement, but nothing to really get excited about. Very, very sloppy defensively, very open. Their lack of a killer final ball let them down multiple times when they had 5-on-3 advantages because we'd just given the ball away foolishly in a dangerous area and certain players weren't tracking back. Certain lads looked out of their depth. And I said at half time, we look really, really badly coached. And we did. We looked really badly coached in that first half. They looked more prepared, more disciplined, more well-drilled. They had a game plan and they were sticking to it and it was working for them. And I thought they were probably good value for their equaliser. But second half, I have to say, we had probably 25 minutes where I thought we looked a really good team. And
there was something. There was
score not one but two goals from open play, which, I mean, that's a thing to celebrate in itself.
It is, and there was a couple of times, wasn't there, in that first half, and maybe on one occasion in the second half, but certainly in the first half particularly, where it did have that feel of, is this just the same game again? Because they were able to play little one-touch passing moves around us and find themselves with opportunities, and it had that sort of sinking feeling about it in terms of, have we learned nothing? And I was quite despondent as well, I must admit, in terms of like the openness that we were displaying defensively. Sort of sickened for all concerned, really, you know, sickened that this is going to be a very grim sort of captain's debut season for Virgil. Sickened that this is how we're going to see out the Klopp era. But like you say, the rallying happens. And Jim, to bring you in on this now, just quickly and early, the rally does sort of occur. There is a stepping up to the plate as such by one or two individuals. There was more cohesiveness to the play. Ironically, actually, when we made those changes and brought on our nominal first teamers, the attacking play after that was, well, somewhere between poor and unimpressive, with all the usual flaws about it. But there is something to be said for digging out this result, which allows us to have a moment where we get to see Jürgen reigniting the good feeling himself there at the end, getting to do the fist bumps. These are, you know, they're starting to run out, these little moments, and it's lovely to have it back. You'd like to think it's going to be a feature between now and the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, before the game, I just sort of wrote some thoughts down, and I ended it with, I want us to enjoy our football now as players, as fans, make the most of every minute we've got left under this great man. If it leads to something marvellous, great. If it leads to something that's marvellous, if not, let's still enjoy it, because we have only got these, you know, you can count it in minutes now how many more we've got with him leading the team. So let's enjoy the football. I want the players to enjoy it. I want the fans to enjoy it. And if the players and the fans are enjoying it, it feels like there's less pressure. I think, are City going to slip up? Who knows? I think being that little bit behind and being a little bit more relaxed, but not sort of relaxed in a lackadaisical way too much. If we can be more relaxed, less stressed, less pressured, go out and do our thing, enjoy our football. We can win every game from now till the end of the season. And I think if we'd been leading the table still, we'd have felt, you know, the slip-up still would have been on its way, if you get what I mean. And I feel like, you know, although we have had vulnerabilities today, we were enjoying our football. We were doing it right. We were, I don't know, it's hard to explain. Like, patient yet not sort of like dawdling, sort of, waiting for the right moment, just being precise. We let them score and we'll go on about that, obviously. But I feel like that was more of a blip. And what I love most about the game today really was that something I've loved under Klopp, and I've just been writing an article for a fanzine about Klopp, so I've been thinking back to something early on with him. Mm-hmm. I've said it all along. It's his way that his teams react to stuff. Shit happens in a game. It can be the ref. Yes, Notts Forest. It can be a mistake. It can be an injury. It can be a fluky goal. It can be a worldie against you. Whatever, things happen, and it's how you react to it that makes the difference. And I feel, you know, them scoring just before halftime was much better than them scoring just after halftime. Because at halftime, I'm sure Klopp could just talk to them and say, "Look, get out there and do your thing. You know, don't react to this. Don't go behind again." And such a difference to the game against Fulham at home when we beat them 4-3, you know, when we kept just throwing things away. I feel that once we had the blip, but once we'd got that, I didn't feel worried in that second half at all. I'm just hoping this is the case now, rest of the season. Let's enjoy these last few games. And if we play and enjoy our football, we are so good. You can see it in all the players' faces when they're enjoying the game. Gakpo today, Trent today, Harvey Elliott shoving the booze back in the faces of the Fulham fans. You know, we were enjoying our football today, and that's what I like to see.
That's going to be something that's going to feature in our discussion, because I did think it manifested towards the end of the game when he had an opportunity to shoot, and I think possibly didn't take it because that crowd were on him for the entirety of the match. But as Jim says, a lot of things to revel in. And Dave, just as we kind of look at the Liverpool lineup, which was in itself controversial, that is a good point, isn't it? That we just need to see that ability to react to adversity again, because it has been very much a feature of this season and the Klopp era in general.
Yeah, it has. It's been one of the primary factors and the primary kind of identifiers of Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, is that ability to react and overcome. And if you look at everything we've overcome this season in terms of shit referees and injuries and different things like that, it does remain one of the strengths of this team. It's just something that had sort of disappeared in recent weeks, and it was good to see it back today. Now, I disagree with Jim. He says he wasn't worried in the second half. I was worried until the third goal went in. I'm not going to lie, because we've seen this team just give up too many soft goals in recent weeks, and there were still moments where Fulham were attacking and getting numbers forward and looking like they might cause us some problems. But we did definitely react well in the second half. There was more purpose to a lot of what we were doing. I thought after a poor first half, certain players, including the two Dutch boys, Gakpo and Gravenberg, they had really good spells in that second half. Harvey was a bit lost in the first half at times, just because of the shape with Trent inverting, with no natural width on the right, because Diaz doesn't normally play there and was drifting a little bit. So Harvey was playing wide at times, but then Diaz would hold real with, and then Harvey and him would kind of be in each other's way. So he was trying to figure out where he was meant to be, and he was coming over to the left in search of the ball quite a bit as well, which wasn't helping because he was getting the ball when Gravenberch was looking for it, probably in a slightly better position. But look, it all worked out for us in the second half. Those three boys all clicked into gear. I thought Harvey had an outstanding second half. And like I said, the two boys, the two Dutch lads. For Gravenberch, from when he scored to when he went off, I think it was 19 minutes. That's the best 19 minutes he's had in the Premier League by a country mile, because it wasn't just about one or two flash dribbles. It was about fundamentally sound play in the structure of the team, impacting us winning the game. That's what every player needs to do, and they need to find a way to do it within the boundaries of the team. And today, I thought for the 19 minutes between when he scored and when he went off, he did exactly that.
I think you could say, just lest I be accused of not following through with what I was sort of intimating during the game, you could probably say that he possibly had some of his worst minutes in the shirt in the first half to balance that out. So
he was awful in the first half.
It was lovely to see that come good, and especially in such a graphic way with the goal. Just to get a little bit of chat on the team from both of you, because just for the record, Fulham went fairly predictably with Adarabuyo, with Bassi as their centre halves, with Robinson and Castagna either side, Pellini and Lukic nominally in the mid, Iwobi, Pereira and De Cordova, Reed behind Muniz, and on the bench they have a strong enough sort of a selection, kind of, in Harry Wilson, Tom Kearney, Adama Traore, all of whom came on, Rodak, Kenny Tete, Harrison Reed, Raul Jimenez, Armando Broja and Tim Ream makes up the rest of their bench. But Dave, just to start with you on the Liverpool team, and I'll go to Jim for his take on it as well. There was a little bit of urine boiling going on left, right and centre when that those names were revealed. The midfield of Endo, Gravenberch and Elliot is, to the anyone's eyes, an experiment. The attacking lineup with Diaz right, Gakpo left, and Jota in the centre is, to anyone's eyes, an experiment. And the introduction of Kwanzaa in place of Ibu was, again, another eyebrow raiser for some people. It did mean that our bench was the strongest bench I think we've seen all season, with Joe Gomez, Dom Szoboszlai, Darwin Nunez, Alex McAllister, and Mohamed Salah all on there, all of whom came on alongside Kanate and Curtis Jones. And you could say that all of those names there, that's seven names I've called out, are nominal first teamers, depending on the time of the season, depending on the game. And the bench was made up by Tsimikas and Kelleher. So, like I say, very strong looking. We didn't actually need to draw on that bench in any great way for it to have a massive impact, I don't think, because by the time our subs came on, we had actually gone that goal ahead. I'd be interested to hear what you think as we go on. They actually made a massive difference to how the game was seen out. But talk to me around about that selection, because it was controversial and it did, like I say, raise a few hackles.
It did more than that. Like you said, it boiled a lot of piss. I will say, I think that might be the strongest bench we've ever had for a Premier League game, ever, since the beginning of the Premier League. I don't ever remember us having a bench where you'd look at it and go, geez, most of them boys are first choice. Most of them boys should be starting.
Yeah.
So that is nice, like, you know, and there was still a lot of talent on the pitch, but as you say, a lot of experimentation, particularly that midfield three. One thing I was really happy to see was how he lined the forwards up, because we've seen Diaz and Gakpo play together with Darwin. Darwin obviously has the nine, and Diaz would be left side and Gakpo right side. So it was really good to see him go Gakpo left side, Diaz right side, let Gakpo play his kind of primary position. And by putting Diaz right side, you sort of limit his game and you get him more focused on just beating the man and trying to make things happen from there rather than constantly drifting in field with the ball and running into trouble. So the front three I was happy enough with because, like, look, Darwin's been out of form. Mo has been out of form. I don't believe Mo Salah is fit. Certainly not fully fit, certainly not match fit. So quite happy to see him on the bench, quite happy to see Darwin on the bench. And the positive there is that you know you have the option to bring them on. And I think he did look at bringing them on before the Gravenberch goal. They were warming up and then he sat them back down. So like the forward line I was happy enough with. Had no issue with Kwanzaa coming in. Because other than the one loose pass at Old Trafford, Gerald Kwanzaa has been very, very good this season. There's just no way around that. He has been very, very good this season and absolutely warrants the minutes he's gotten. I don't know what on earth the midfield was, because first half it was absolutely shambolic. Endo did the thing he did earlier in the season where he looked like a raffle winner in the first half and then had a really good second half. Gravenberch looked like a make-a-wish kid and then had a really good second half. And Harvey, like I say, he's the one that you're comfortable having in the team because he's played over 100 games for us now and he's constantly shown himself to be a valuable squad player. But when you patch him with the other two, that's where you have a bit of concern. If it was Harvey with any other two or Endo with any other two or Gravenberch with any other two with and even Gravenberch, Endo and Alexis or Gravenberch, Endo and Curtis, we've seen that midfield work in cup games and Europa League games. But yeah, I was just a little bit concerned about the midfield being a little bit lightweight. And I thought in the first half it was a little bit lightweight. I thought they were able to put quite a bit of pressure on them. I thought Iwobi had a big influence in the first half and Polina was quite physically dominant, though we did find ways to limit him by getting him on that yellow card.
Jim, there's a question needs asking, I suppose, around about the selection, and that is, well, it does display quite a lot of testicular fortitude on the part of our manager to go with that lineup. But a lot of people will be reading a lot of different things into it. You can't help it. Narrative's gone to narrative. And so people will look at that midfield and they'll say, what's he saying about Alexis McAllister? What's he saying about Curtis Jones? What is the point that's being made there about Dom Szoboszlai? Like, they'll look at the attack and they'll say, has he lost faith in Darwin Núñez? Is this a big fuck you to Mo for the constant missing that he's been doing lately? You know, what is the point that's being made here? Why is Kwanzaa in for this one when a lot of people have predicted he might be in for the derby, but not this one? Like I say, especially in that midfield area, but also in the attack, the idea of benching so many lads who might be considered automatic starters, it was quite a gamble because we know about Klopp and loyalty and people are going to read this in a very specific way. How much is the arm around the shoulder going to work on all of those guys who got dropped? That's what happened there. They got dropped.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Yeah, I mean, I thought to myself, I mean, Salah, my first thought was, if he's been dropped or if he's been rested because he's got an injury, whatever it is, I don't think he can complain. It's sort of, he's lost that first choice forward thing that he's had most of the time he's been at the club, because the way he's played lately, I don't think, certainly if you're sort of going through who you're going to play up front, you'd name Jota and you'd name Gakpo before you'd play Salah on recent form. So I wasn't surprised with that. Darwin's one who comes in and goes out. He's and he does kind of swap and change. That's the weird part to it, more than anything, I suppose, is he rarely drops Salah, even when Salah's having bad games, because generally speaking, Salah is, even on a bad game, at least as good as the others. And that hasn't been the case. You know, we've seen him drop off more than we've ever seen him drop off as a player for us of late. And hopefully, if you know, unless he is going to go in the summer, we'll wait and see. Hopefully this is just a short-term thing, and if we do have him next season, he comes back the player we've known and loved. But I've no issue with that, and I think any player should know that if you're not playing well enough, you're not going to keep your place automatically. But the flip side to that, then, is the way we've played lately, where we kind of do this thing where, the whole season, we kind of do this thing where for 25 minutes, we can kind of let the other side, you know, we mess about. We just don't play for the first half of the first half, and time and again, we go behind, and we end up needing to find something later on in the game. And in games recently, we've not had that because we've been sort of maybe, you know, too spent by then. By the time we've got the chance and we really need it, we've not had it. So I was thinking maybe that was some of the thinking. Because looking at the bench, I mean, it's not that long ago, we were kind of counting how many known first teamers are on the bench. Not first choices, first teamers. And we kind of like, we were counting like three or four outfield players that we would class as recognised first team players. All of them were recognised first team players, and many of them were recognised. I don't know, if you were picking a chip, you know, if we had been in a final this season and you were going to pick your team for it, a lot of those would have been, you'd expect to be starting. But I do wonder if that's what part of it was that he's thinking, look, the lads that I'm putting out now are capable of doing something here. They're capable of getting a result here. But if we do our thing that happens, whoever's playing, and we end up conceding, that we've got some strength on the bench that can change it and turn it around. Because I mean, if you pick five from those and bring them on when you need a goal, you'd hope you're going to get one. Evidence maybe today showed us maybe we wouldn't have done. And also, it just gives confidence to the players who do play. It gives them that chance because, you know, here's your chance to shine. And Gravenberch took that with both hands. I mean, when I looked, that was the sort of the only question mark I put against the starting lineup was Gravenberch, because I thought, you know, of the other players, I wouldn't have a complaint about Endo playing, generally speaking. Wouldn't have a complaint about Elliot in midfield, generally speaking. The issue is that Gravenberch was the other one in there, wasn't it? The third one that kind of, you know, you'd at least hope McAllister was in there or Dominic Szoboszlai. But Szoboszlai's not been great lately. And I honestly think with McAllister that as much as I think somehow he's just kept going, and no matter how much football he plays, he just keeps going. I think there's got to come a point where you need to give him a bit of a rest. And he must be some thinking about the derby up ahead as well.
Why it was easy to actually rest them for this game, though.
Exactly, yeah, because I'm thinking
you can sit them down and say, look, yeah, you're not going to play, you're not going to start this one because we've got the derby in midweek, and then we've got the 12:30 kickoff against West Ham.
Yeah.
So even though I would like, of the three teams, this was the one I would look at as the toughest, because I think West Ham at the moment look very much on the ropes, and they got beaten 5-2 by Crystal Palace today. Everton are garbage. Fulham, I think, are probably the toughest opponent of the three right now. But
as we've seen this season, three times.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not three been easy games.
Any time. So.
But one of them's a derby, and the other one's a 12:30 kickoff away from home. So this was probably the one where he looked at and thought, okay, all things considered, this is where I'll make some changes.
Yeah, and that was my first thought. I was thinking, who are we playing next? And you know, you sort of, you forget where you are in the season. You think, oh, Champions League game. You know, we haven't even in the Champions League, but you think big game midweek must be. We're resting. And my thought then sometimes is, oh shit, we're sending them a message. Oh look, they don't think we're hard to beat. Let's go out and beat them because they put a weakened team out. And I don't think you could give that message today because I don't think they'd realise that it's only Everton in midweek. And the trouble with that game is it's such high octane game, isn't it? You know, regardless of the form book, which, you know, as the cliche says, goes out the window. It's such a high octane game that, you know, you need level heads, you need double shin pads and everything as well. So, you know, it's a massive game in that sense because of the game itself. Regardless of what's going on in the league, it's a massive game. It means so much. It means so much for them. They're fighting for their lives, and, you know, they may or may not have the ref on their side. If you listen to Everton fans, you never have the ref on their side, though. So,
yeah, there's a very definite trend there for sure. Why don't you and I, Dave, have a look at the first half hour leading up to the goal? Because in that we have quite a lot to talk about, I guess. On 3 minutes, there is an opportunity for us where a lovely ball in by Trent is glanced narrowly wide with a sort of a diving header, sort of a leaning forward header by Luis Diaz. Gary Neville, very critical and saying he should have scored. I don't know. I think it's, you know, it's very close to goal. It's at full stretch. It's not a bad effort. On 7 minutes, Luis Diaz is nearly in again, this time off a Robbo pass, but the interception leads to a corner, which breaks to Trent, and his return ball in from the far side is absolutely woeful. On 13 minutes, there's a very dangerous Pereira free kick from their left-hand side, comes in, and it's cleared for us by Tosin, who does a super job of clearing our lines for us when he seems to be in the middle of a bunch of, I think, three of them who are quite unchallenged. It's a let-off, let's say. We did generally, though, look a bit brighter than in recent games. Harvey Elliott was quite busy. I thought our two Dutch boys were struggling a bit in that opening few moments to stay on the ball, stay in possession, those kind of things that we've been often worried about with them in terms of, you know, physicality. On 21 minutes, there is a great move that ends with a Luis Diaz pullback to Jota. He fires wide of the near post. Thankfully, in the long run, it ends up being a bit of a sighter for Jota. 24 minutes, decent move by them, ends up with a kind of a token ping by Palinha at Ali from just outside the box. It's low, it's easy for him to gather up. I've noted at this point, and it's worth saying at some stage in the show, just in case it doesn't come up again, that the travelling cop were absolutely magnificent. Mm-hmm. You know, it was clear that the only thing that was going to unify the Fulham fans was bagging on Harvey Elliott. They had nothing else to say for themselves. I thought our fans were an absolute tribute to the club. Bit of a fall over by Cody Gakpo, and there's a free kick central right-hand side of the D in 26 minutes, which Harvey hits into the wall, and this is the thing that really unites the Fulham fans. They're off to the races, having been absolutely bodied by the travelling cop up till now. They found something to unify over, the way they could poke fun at a young lad who used to play for them. There is, however, a free kick on 31 minutes. It's on slightly to the left of the D. Trent steps up to this one and just strokes it home to the top ends. It's absolutely gorgeous, Dave. And in that half hour, I think it was enough to suggest that we would have deserved our lead. Like I said, a brightness to certain elements of our play, if sadly the usual kind of lack of penetration. It will be lovely if it happens before the end of the season to go a couple of goals up really early.
Yeah, it would be really nice to, you know, to start a game the way we traditionally under Jurgen Klopp started games and go out and put a team to the sword after 20 minutes, you're 3-0 up, and then you can just go into cruise control and you can sit in nice and compact and just kill them on the counter-attack. But none of that for this team at the moment. There was some glimpses of good play in that first half hour. Then the final ball just routinely let us down, or someone's decision-making would let us down, or, you know, they'd just get a toe in. At some point, there was a couple of moments where it looked like we might get in, but Bassey would stick a foot in, or Tosin would get a foot across, and they'd lift the ball and they'd go the other way. And the concern in that first 30 was just how easy they seemed to find it to counter us and to get numbers the wrong side of our midfield. But we settled in. We started to play quite a controlled game. And I had Graham Lasso on commentary because I refused to do Neville. And he was saying, like, Liverpool are playing with a measure of control that you normally see in a team that's 2-0 up, except that the scoreline is 0-0. And that I felt the same way. It was almost like we didn't have any real urgency about our play. Like, we were like, oh, well, sure, like, we'll just keep the ball and, like, we have a lead, so it's fine. But we didn't have the lead. Then we get that first free kick. It is... I assume Harvey thought the wall was going to jump and he was trying to put it underneath the wall, but it's absolutely abysmal. And I'd imagine when he wandered over for the second free kick, Trent quite politely told him to go away. There was absolutely no chance he was going to be allowed to take another one. It is an incredible free kick. It is absolutely phenomenal. He just lifts it over the wall. Like, there's no real curl or whip on it. It is just lifted and dipped over the wall. I genuinely enjoyed his celebration. I genuinely enjoyed how furious the Fulham players were. That Trent moved the ball about 4 inches to the right, as if that was going to make any difference at all. I enjoyed how upset the Fulham fans were. And you are wrong. They united in three things, Trev. Oh. Number one, their dislike of Harvey Elliott, who made a handful of substitute appearances for them as a 15, 16-year-old and left the club because the club decided the year previously not to offer him a 2-year extension, which was their option. They could have offered him a 2-year extension to his terms, and they chose not to. And then he played out the year, and they just assumed, well, like, I mean, we're Fulham, he's going to stay with us. But he was one of the most talented young players in his age group in Europe, so he had offers from everywhere and chose to leave.
Including the club that he supported as a kid.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Chose to leave for the club that he grew up supporting. So what they're all that upset about, I don't know. Maybe it's the fact that we gave them 4 million rising to 7 million on appearances for him, but that's because it went to tribunal because they turned down the 10 million that we offered. Like, this is the thing. If they want to boo and be angry at someone, be angry at your own club. They fucked this up twice. Don't be angry at the young fella. He didn't do anything wrong. He played out his contract and then left. It happens. They united in their belief that the referee didn't know what he was doing. And that was a chant. So they had Harvey Elliott as a wanker, boo, and you don't know what you're doing. So congrats to Fulham. Three chants from the fans. No chance about their own players.
There was a scouser. He was the scouser in the black.
Yeah. That's not their chant, though. That's one they've nicked off other clubs. So we're not going to give them credit for that. And then they united in the rush to get themselves inside onto the concourse for the halftime prawn sandwiches and avocado toast. Because if you notice, when they scored, there were quite a few more empty seats than there had been earlier in the half, because most of their lot had buggered inside to get their halftime delicacies.
What a shower. Unbelievable. And, you know, as you've described beautifully, great hit. If you're going to set up your wall like that and leave that much of the goal gaping, and you have someone with the capabilities of Trent, you're always in danger of conceding like that. It was lovely to see him do it. It was lovely to see our world-class player do a world-class thing. You'd like to think that by the end of the season, that might be part of the things that'll push us, if we're going to get anywhere, to the edge. Yeah,
a little bit of poetic justice on the thing about them complaining that Trent moved the ball slightly. When the ref was trying to get them back for the free kick Harvey took, he drew the line, and they didn't get behind it. They sort of stood on it, and he just sort of gave up on it. Just let them stand on it. Now, it's only a couple of inches, but the ref didn't sort of push the point with them, and they got away with that couple of inches. So, you know, it swings around abouts, isn't it, really? So,
you know what, Jim? I don't mind it. on 33 minutes, Cody hits a very vicious dig at goal. It's tipped over for a corner. Nothing comes of that because the ball goes short to Gravenberch and it sort of fizzles out. And as they break, Kwanzaa's down on the deck and we're thinking, oh, Christ. He did look like he was in a bit of bother for a minute, but by 36 minutes, he's back up and okay and on the pitch. On 37, Muniz chests one down in between Gravenberch and Van Dijk and thankfully blows his volley miles over the top. On 39, Tosin picks up a yellow for a foul on Cody Gakpo. And on 40, Endo coughs up possession in the middle of the park. I didn't get to see a replay of the incident, so I don't know. I just know that he was involved in whatever that tackle was. They cut through us way too easily and Muniz hits one at Ali kind of on the swivel. It's another wake-up call if we haven't woken up. On 50 minutes, Cody carries the ball. On about 41 minutes, Cody carries the ball at least 50, 60 yards. Now, the running ahead of him was absolutely headless. There was nothing. Nobody making any angles. He had nowhere really to go. I did actually feel a little bit of sympathy for him. Eventually plays the ball right to Trent, and Trent's cross hits the first man, and a promising counter-attack fades away. Then we have a series of fuck-ups. Robbo plays the ball into Gravenberch, infield to Gravenberch, from sort of the corner flag, corner of the box area, into Gravenberch, just outside the box on the sort of right-hand side of the D as you're looking at our goal. Gravenberch loses the ball and gives away a free kick. And we, at this stage, have found out the 4 minutes are to be added. Pereira hits that free kick, and it was kind of screaming that he was going to have a dig because there was a little bit of goal to aim at, and he hits it at goal. Ali seems to get a little bit of a touch. I think best case scenario would have hit the bar and probably gone over, but Ali anyway got a little bit of a touch. It seemed, at least all the commentators are claiming he did. And we get away, in inverted commas, with not giving away a corner. And yet somehow... Remember, this is just as the half has gone across and we're into the 46 minutes. Somehow, within seconds, we've coughed up possession of the ball again. Having gotten away with the corner, we've coughed up possession of the ball. And on 46 minutes, it is 1-1. And it had a horrible, familiar feel to it, the way this goal was conceded. A cross came in from the left-hand side. Robbo seemed to roll Mooney's a bit. There was definitely going to be a look at that at some stage. The ball breaks to Iwobi. He sends it back on the half volley. Mooney's hits a header, flicks one towards goal, but it's cleared only as far as Castagna, who's coming in on the edge of the box, kind of central. And with his left foot, helps it through a forest of legs and into the corner of the goal. Puts a bit of pace on it, but I think it takes a clip off Ali on its way. And then the despairing foot, it might be Endo, is too late and can't stop it going in. It's an absolute sickener, Jim, of a goal to concede. But on the balance of play after our goal, they did have a little bit of threat. And we didn't close out the game in any way, shape or form. So I guess you reap what you sow, and we had started to invite them on a little bit. It was really daft, a succession of sort of errors or misjudgments there, from Robbo's pass to Grab's fuck up to that free kick to coughing up possession when we actually got a break and didn't concede the corner. It's just really irritating because it's a goal. It's the goal that comes off the back of some silliness.
Hey guys, it's Eddie Gibbs from Anfield Index here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast, and I'm sorry to call time on the show before it ends. In the current climate, it's tougher than ever before to offer podcasts for free. At Anfield Index, we produce over 75 free shows every month, which I'm confident is unparalleled in the LFC sphere. Whilst we'd love to offer everything for free, the production costs now make this impossible. That said, we don't want to follow the model of other channels and lock all of our content behind a paywall. So what we've decided to do is to continue offering every show for free, but cut that offering to 30 minutes on our longer shows. So to get all of our shows in full and enjoy the best of everything we have to offer, we really hope you'll consider supporting the channel and signing up at AnfieldIndexPro.com. For about the price of one cup of coffee, you'll get every podcast in full with zero ads. You'll also get access to our LFC VIP community, where you can enjoy live podcasts, engage with our podcasters, and chat with other Reds in real time. So that website again, AnfieldIndexPro.com. Join today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.